Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Today, we are going to talk about the events that took place at UFC 257. Obviously, Dustin Poirier picked up a big win over Conor McGregor, big upset. Underdog came on strong last night, and let's get to it. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you guys. This is a Conor McGregor fight. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about what's next for those guys, what the landscape at 155 looks like, especially considering the co-main event. But let's run through the prelims real quick, right? The night starts off with Amir Albazi picking up a win over Zhalgas Zhumagulov. I think I'm mispronouncing that. I'm sorry, Zhalgas, if I'm even saying your fucking name right. Good fight there to kick the night off. Movsar Evloev beat Nick Lentz. I just woke up, guys. I'm struggling with these fucking names. I'm sorry. I always struggle with them anyway, but it's just, I feel like the fact that I'm a little bit tired is compounding it, right? Marcin Prochnia was riding a 3-fight losing streak before picking up a win over Khalil Roundtree last night. So that was a big deal for him. That was the first fight, I think, that aired on ESPN on cable. Juliana Pena and Sarah McMahon. This was a good one. I lost money on this one, guys. I thought that this one was going to go to a decision, not because it was going to be boring or anything. I just thought these two girls were going to have a really hard time finishing each other. I thought that McMahon would have the obvious wrestling advantages, but when you get into those exchanges with those practiced jiu-jitsu players, sometimes it just takes time. And when the third round rolled around, Juliana Pena was just... She was able to take the back of Sarah McMahon and pick up a rear naked choke win. So a big win for Juliana Pena. And, in a division, the women's bantamweight division, it's really just looking for someone right now to dethrone Amanda Nunes. So every finish that you get is a step in getting that opportunity, at least, right? I'm not going to say pulling it off, but getting a chance to do it. Brad Tavares then beat Antonio Carlos Jr. in the next fight. And then one of the guys that you got to be more excited about, just if you look at his skill set, his fight IQ, the way that he just handles everything with technique and skill, is Arman Tsarukyan. He beat Matt Frivola last night. And Frivola's a brawler, man. Like, you got to realize that he's willing to take chances. He'll get hit to hit somebody. He's got pretty good jiu-jitsu. And he is just one of those guys where it's not an easy fight to take by any means. And he's dangerous. He's a little bit wild, can be a little unpredictable. And Arman Tsarukyan just stuck with the game plan and fought a well-calculated fight for 15 minutes and picked up a win over, like I said, a dangerous guy, right? And now we move on to the main card. So Amanda Hibas is one of the more hyped athletes in the women's strawweight division. And, she was having a good first round and everything. And then I believe it was in the second round, Mariana Rodriguez caught her with, I think, a right hook. I think it was a right hook that she – I'd have to go back and watch the fight. I can't remember off the top of my head. Caught her with the right hook. It drops her, hurts her. Mariana Rodriguez pounces on top of her and starts, wailing away. Herb Dean steps in like he's going to stop it. Makes contact with Mariana Rodriguez. So Mariana Rodriguez is like, hey, fuck, I won. Walks away. And – Herb Dean's like just standing there, never calls the fight off. Amanda Hibas kind of gets up, is clearly still rocked, like in a different fucking planet. Looks at Herb Dean like, are we really still about to go, with this like blank look on her face. And Mariana Rodriguez is like, what the fuck? Herb says he never called it off. And Mariana Rodriguez goes back and basically knocks out Amanda Hibas twice. Picks up the win. Big win for her over, like I said, the women's strawweight division is pretty exciting right now. And to pick up a win over someone with as much hype as Amanda Hibas, that's a big deal for Mariana Rodriguez. So kudos to her. Makhmad Muradov versus Andrew Sanchez was a good fight. I think that I kind of thought going into this one that Sanchez was going to have to really lean on the wrestling if he wanted to pick up a win. Sorry, guys. I need to drink some fucking coffee. But he never really was able to get into that rhythm, like get mix the takedowns and everything, and you got to get the hands going first. And I believe it was the second round where you did start to see the 1-2 connect for Sanchez here and there. But overall, Muradov was just more efficient, more fluid, and the knockout that he picked up, you guys probably saw it if you were scrolling through Instagram or whatever, where it's the one where he hit him with the overhand right, and then Andrew Sanchez was like on skates doing the fucking chicken dance, right, like the Kevin Lee. But big win for Makhmad Muradov. Moving on to the women's flyweight division, we had a bout between Jessica Eye and Joanne Calderwood. And honestly, I thought this was one of the more entertaining bouts of the night. Pretty back and forth. Joanne Calderwood was putting out a ton of volume and a good fight all around from her. I think I don't want to say she struggled in the positions where it was close. Like, she was definitely landing things of her own, landing knees, landing short little uppercuts and stuff. Like, willing to engage in the clinch, held on to that Muay Thai clinch, grabbing the neck of Jessica Eye. And, you know, but I really think that Joanne Calderwood shines when she's attacking people at range and using her reach and her combinations and just, you know, throwing that teep to the body. And she was landing that roundhouse kick to the body a lot. And just like I said, keeping people on the end of her strikes. I think that's where she really finds success. And when she was able to do that against Jessica Eye, she looked really good. Put out a ton of volume. Fun fight to watch and a good way to get you warmed up for the next fight between Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler. Now, Michael Chandler has obviously made a name for himself as one of the best lightweights in the world over in Bellator, famous for his wars with Eddie Alvarez. And there's no denying that famous for more than that. That's just, when I think of Michael Chandler, I think him and Eddie Alvarez just go hand in hand to me because of the wars they had over there. But Michael Chandler's clearly one of the more gifted 155-pounders in the world. But the question was, you're doing it in Bellator. And not knocking Bellator. I mean, they're starting to really add to the roster. I think they're getting a lot more depth. I think they're kind of narrowing that gap slightly. But nobody really believes it until you pull it off at the UFC. I was just talking to, this is somewhat unrelated, but I was just talking to someone the other day about like Bitcoin and how, like, you know, when you talk about crypto, the first thing that people are always going to think about is Bitcoin. Well, with MMA, the first thing people always think about is UFC, like to the point where they call MMA they call it doing UFC, right? So it's almost synonymous with the sport. So until you pick up a win in the ultimate proving ground, it doesn't really mean a lot to people, unfortunately, regardless of how tough the competition is in these other organizations. And there's no really other way to tell until something like this happens, until you get an athlete from another division that crosses over. And Michael Chandler came in and put on a fucking show against Dan Hooker. He never let Dan Hooker's footwork get going, constantly stayed moving, had Dan Hooker confused, I think. And he got him, Michael Chandler generally fights out of orthodox, but you just realize that he had power in both hands, and he was throwing those big lunging right hands, right? And he's got the wrestling, so Dan Hooker's instinctively carrying his hands maybe a little bit lower because he's preparing for the takedown attempt that's coming. Because what do wrestlers love to fucking throw, guys? They love to throw an overhand right to use it to set up a takedown. So if you're Hooker, I don't know if you saw that left hook coming around that sat him on his ass, right? I don't think you're expecting that if you're Dan Hooker. And Michael Chandler just looked fucking brilliant. Calls out after the fight Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Habib, all the guys at the top. And it was just, you know, anytime something like this happens, you know for a fact now that Michael Chandler is the real fucking deal. Like, you don't just do that to Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker is very legit, right? And yeah, it makes you wonder what's going to be next for these guys. Well, let's talk about the next fight. Let's talk about the bout between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. And then we'll talk about the landscape at 155 right now, because there's a lot going on. All right, so the fight opens up, and I admittedly had money on Conor in this one, guys. I thought he was going to pull it off, right? So I was watching everything. I felt good about the weigh-ins, watching them, the body language from Conor and everything. And then I was watching him warm up, and I looked at Bethany, my fiance. Sorry if you guys don't know her name, but I was like, man, I'm not feeling so good about this. I was like, why is his stance like that? He's very square. Like, he looks like he's taking a boxing heavy approach, which I thought was a bad idea against Dustin Poirier. And then I saw him warming up in the octagon, and I was like, oh, I wish I could take my money off him, man. Not that it was impossible for him to pull it off, but I really felt like he was getting away from what got him to the dance. Conor always comes out in that sideways stance and stuff, hand up, like kind of gauging the distance out, throwing kicks and stuff, that front leg side kick, hook kicks, spinning back kicks. When he came out and was very square, kind of hunched down, putting a lot of weight on his lead leg, I was like, this is a problem, man. This is not good. It's not that he can't pack power into his punches there, but it's just not where Conor's found success throughout his career. He usually fights very upright with a wide stance, right? And it lets him slide in and out of range easily. And also, guys, there's just something, in my opinion, to like Dustin Poirier fights the way he fights, because that's just like how he finds success for his body and his build and how his movements and everything, right? Like, I didn't understand Like, even when you watch Conor fight, like, Eddie Alvarez, right? He's got that sideways stance, and it just gives him the angles that he needs to fire things off. I think it helps with his timing. So I saw that. Oh, and when I saw that his fucking head was bald, I was like, fuck. Because you look at Nate Diaz, you look at Khabib. I know he had hair in the Khabib fight. I take that back. But everybody loses to Khabib, so I don't even count that one. But if you look at the Nate Diaz fight and the Floyd Mayweather fight and now the Dustin Poirier fight, he had a shaved head in all of them. What the fuck, right? And I think he lost his earlier fights in his MMA career when he had a shaved head as well. The only losses on his career. Like, maybe obviously I'm reading too far into his superstition, but it just felt like everything was going against me, right? Like, I felt like the bet was not going to play out after I placed it. Because I picked Conor to finish him in 1-2 because Conor doesn't have a finish in the UFC after the second round. So I thought if he got it done, and I thought he would, be inside two rounds. But as soon as I saw, like, the stance from him, I was like, this isn't good. This is not what got you to the dance, right? So there was that problem. But anyway, the fight starts off. And in the very first exchange, Conor fires something off, and usually he's successful. And Dustin's kind of like, I think Dustin got the better of the very first exchange. If you guys check out the breakdown I did, he landed a nice little leg kick. And it was the first thing that Dustin landed and the first thing of significance that landed in the whole fight, an inside leg kick to the lead leg of Conor, right? Conor starts marching him down, throwing some 1-2s, throwing, you know. But again, not a kick-heavy approach. His balance, his weight is more over his lead leg. He's doing a lot more boxing. And you got to realize, too, that, like, if you do implement, like, a kick-heavy approach, especially with those side kicks and stuff, you have to, if you're heavier on your lead leg, you're going to have to lean back more. Like, usually Conor's more centered over himself. Talking too much about it. Anyway, so the fight starts. Dustin Poirier then lands a takedown. And it wasn't even, like, a great setup on an entry. He threw a left hook. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. That is how you can set a takedown up. But, like, it wasn't the cleanest shot that we've ever seen. I thought Conor had a hard time getting his hips back and dealing with that. Poirier was able to get him up against the cage, grind on him, and start wearing on him a little bit. And you guys know Conor, man. Once that pop starts leaving his punches, it becomes a much different fight for him, right? So this is a smart technique from Dustin Poirier. Gets back up. Conor eventually kind of reestablishes himself and I think walks away winning the round. Lands some 1-2s, got the right hand in there a couple times. And Dustin Poirier probably lost the round, but he was putting money in the bank, as Paul Felder would say, over and over and over again with those leg kicks, man. Like, you could tell that it was bothering Conor, and by the end of the first round and the beginning of the second, he couldn't really put his weight on it as effectively, right? So the second round kicks off. And you really start to see now, like, Conor comes out, I think he came out relatively strong, started doing well, but then as Dustin continued to just attack that lead leg, you started to see that Conor started whiffing on his 1-2s, missing on almost all the punches that he threw, missing with his kicks, out of position with his footwork. After he would throw combinations, he wasn't resetting and getting back defensively. Things were just off for him. Like I said, he was allowing Dustin Poirier to circle freely away from his power side. Whereas in the first fight you watched between those two, when Dustin Poirier would circle away from him, boom, spinning back kick right to the body, like giving you a reason to circle towards his power. None of that was really happening for Conor last night, right? Like I said, I think he implemented too heavy of a boxing approach. Anyway, leg kicks start paying dividends, and eventually you know, also, one other thing that Dustin Poirier was doing a really good job of was covering up, rolling his head, blocking the right hand from Conor, blocking the left, and then rolling and coming over top with his right hand after Conor would throw the left and connecting, right? Like, he would roll that hook over and connect with Conor all the time. So there were things that Dustin was doing well in the fight, but it, to me, guys, anyway, okay, so Dustin starts pouring it on, right? And gets a leg kick that kind of, Conor's legs are clearly compromised, gets Conor up against the cage, starts teeing off, and eventually picks up the knockout, right? I'm sure you guys have all seen some shit about it by now. But anyway, what was so interesting about this fight is that from my perspective, like the way I was thinking about it was Conor's had a year off, fought his last fight at 170 against Cowboy and looked really good. You know, yeah, he hasn't had the activity, but Dustin Poirier has been in fucking wars, man. He's already been knocked out by Conor once. He's been knocked out by Michael Johnson before in his career. And not that Dustin Poirier is not a tough guy. Not a tough guy to put away, but I just thought with someone like Conor, like who has that knockout power, it could be a dangerous fight for him, right? And then after it was over, I was like, all right, hindsight, like, Connor definitely, I think, made a mistake changing up his training camp. I didn't like the strategy that he came out with. I think that if he would have fought more true to himself and the things that got him here, he would have had more success against Dustin Poirier. I mean, who the fuck am I to say, right? Like, I don't know. But I also just felt like Connor looked a little bit slow, a little bit lethargic in there, a little bit like he was missing a beat. Again, I don't want to keep fucking pumping the breakdown I did, but I did the breakdown, and there were just moments where, like, Dustin Poirier would be overextending with the right hand and he would miss. And typically, that's where Connor counters, like, boom, 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 like against Eddie Alvarez. It was like Eddie Alvarez would whiff on something and boom, four punches are in your face before you know what the fuck's going on. And it was like Connor was just hesitant to capitalize on those things. I don't know if he was making the reads a little bit too slowly, if he was not anticipating the fight to go that quickly. Like, maybe you're in camp and you're training and things just don't look that fast. And when you get in there and the adrenaline's turned up, man, it's like, goes up to 10, right? So maybe he was just making, he just looked a beat behind me. He looked a little bit slow. He looked a little, and that's not taking anything away from Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier was getting tagged with some good shots. The punches from Connor looked good. Like I said, it was a great game plan from Dustin Poirier to throw those leg kicks in there, especially considering the stance that Connor came out in, was fighting heavy on the lead leg. Yeah, it was just a brilliant performance from Dustin Poirier, but it was one where I looked at Conor McGregor. This is how I thought about it. When the fight was over, I said, that Conor McGregor literally would not stand a chance against Habib. Like, that's not even the same Conor McGregor that went four rounds with Habib. It's just not. You know what I mean? He just looked off to me, man. And not even off, just like I said, just like a beat behind on things and not really. I saw Habib had a tweet and he's like, this is what happens when you get rid of all of the people, like your training partners in the camp and everything that made you a champion. And it's kind of true. I mean, look throughout all the sports, look at some of the greatest sports franchises, right? They're like people who have had consistent coaching or a consistent quarterback, or there's consistency, right? I think that's very important in fighting too, especially, I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't jump around and learn, but I think once you find your place, like, you gotta, it's not, there's gotta be a balance, right? Like, sometimes you really are in the right gym or in the wrong gym and you gotta get the fuck out, but you shouldn't be bouncing around. And I'm not saying it's bad to go learn something from this person or train with this person and exchange information. Like, of course not. But man, I don't know. It was a great fucking win from Dustin Poirier, though. And I'm talking too much about, like, it was just surprising, though. Like, that's just how I feel. It was just a shock factor. But I'm not giving enough credit to, like, or I'm not giving enough limelight, I guess, to Dustin Poirier, because he's a guy who, you got to think, he, down at 145, he was a good fighter. And when he moved up to 155, he became a great fighter. He filled out. He can take a punch a lot better. He has more power in his hands. He's able to still throw the volume. He just looks better. Like, Dustin Poirier looked a little bit bigger than Conor McGregor last night too. So, I don't know, man. Dustin Poirier is undoubtedly one of the best in the world. And this win is going to cement him as one of the best lightweights ever. Obviously, Habib holds the title of the best. But anyway, great fight from Dustin Poirier. Big fucking upset. Like I said, guy from Louisiana, just making a run through the lightweight division right now, making a tear and really making a name for himself. And it's impossible not to feel happy for the guy, right? Like, he's done a lot for the sport, man. He's been around. How many UFC fights? He's one of those guys who grew up in the UFC too, sort of like Max Holloway, right? So anyway, another guy who grew up in the UFC, Charles Oliveira, who, I think, speaking of like the landscape at 155, I think that's the fight that you have to make next for Dustin Poirier. If Habib's not coming back, it's got to be Charles Oliveira. Because just like considering the rankings right now, like, Dustin Poirier already has a win over Gaethje, right? Michael Chandler came in and picked up that big win over Dan Hooker, and you maybe thought that'll be your title fight. It still could be. Like, once Dana gets his hands on things and start talking about matchmaking, like, Dustin Poirier might not have all the say, especially because he doesn't have the belt around his waist technically right now. Like, Habib's still in limbo, doesn't look like he's coming back. But I also saw that Dustin Poirier expressed at a press conference after the fight that he doesn't want the fight with Michael Chandler. He would rather fight somebody like Oliveira. So I think that you might end up seeing Dustin Poirier fight Oliveira. I'll tell you what, guys, I know a lot of people are going to go loss for loss and think that Dan Hooker is going to fight Conor McGregor. I'll tell you what, man. If I was Michael Chandler, I'm looking at that Conor McGregor fight like it's a lot more attainable now. You're still going to make a lot of money. It's still going to be a big win for you. And maybe it's not. Maybe Conor drops out of the top five right now. But I think that people would oddly take Michael Chandler even more seriously if he could beat Conor. The problem is what we just talked about, though, is Conor's performance against Dustin, right? If Michael Chandler beats Conor, then they say, like, maybe that fight won't happen because maybe what Conor needs to do is go pick up a win over somebody like Dan Hooker, right? Or somebody like, I don't fucking know. Let me look up the UFC lightweight. He needs a win to reestablish himself before you want to take a... But the thing with Conor, though, too, is, guys, if Conor goes in and picks up one win, one knockout win where he looks really good and look like he's returned to form, he's going to get the fucking title shot. So you have to think that if you're Michael Chandler, if you... Fighting Conor is a line skip. You're going to jump ahead of people, and you're probably going to end up headlining the event as well. So, fuck. I mean, I don't know. It's Conor McGregor's in a weird position for the first time in his career where maybe he won't be headlining a pay-per-view anytime soon. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But you just think about, like, 185 has Izzy. He's got a fight coming up. People are excited about the heavyweight division with Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou right now. John Jones is bumped up to heavyweight. It's just like, after, if Conor had won last night, then fuck yeah. He's going to be raking in money for the UFC and for himself. But right now, hurts Conor's stock a little bit. Now, Dustin's stock is way fucking up. You just beat the biggest superstar in the world, man. And you knocked him the fuck out, too. Right? Conor never been knocked out in his career. Well, in MMA. And you go out there and do that in his return fight, one of the first fights of the year. Man. So I don't know. If I'm. You got to. For Michael Chandler, though, the payday is still going to be there. I think if you fight someone like Conor, maybe he's going to want somebody like Gaethje. I don't know, man. I still think Conor McGregor is the bigger draw. And I still think that he would do. Then, but the problem is that Poirier is at the top of the division, and you just beat Dan Hooker, and you don't want to keep beating guys that the person that you're chasing has already beat. So that's, thinking about it, like I was just thinking about it from, I'm thinking about it now and getting back, but this is part of the problem too, guys. I'm doing these fucking things alone, and I'm not bouncing ideas off someone else, and they can't tell me why they're stupid ideas. I have to kind of sit here and talk through them and figure it out myself, right? So probably not a realistic fight for Michael Chandler. Maybe you'll see him fight somebody like Justin Gaethje, maybe Oliveira, depending on what Dustin Poirier's move is, what's Khabib going to do. There's a lot going on, but yeah, man, maybe Conor McGregor, maybe he does end up fighting like Dan Hooker. Let me pull up the lightweight rankings. I said I was going to do that, and then got fucking distracted talking. All right, so number one, Gaethje, two, Poirier, three, Oliveira. Oh, man. Like I said, Poirier's got the win over Gaethje. I don't think he's going to fight him again. I think Poirier would fight Khabib if he came back. And then there's Oliveira. You know, you could do the Conor McGregor and Tony Ferguson fight. That's a fun fight. Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, three. That's a fun fight. You know, I think those are. I think one of those three are probably one of the ones that you'll see next. It'll either be Dan Hooker. I also just don't think that Conor... it's so tough. Like, we'll see. But I think one of the most likely, let's go through each of these candidates, right? Dan Hooker. I think that Dan Hooker could end up fighting somebody like Conor McGregor. I think that's a pretty good matchup, all things considered. You both just fought on the same card, probably going to need some time to recover from the knockout. Make the matchup in April, May, probably like May, June, what the fuck ever, right? I don't think that's a bad fight. Michael Chandler might end up fighting somebody like Justin Gaethje. I don't think he'll fight a Tony Ferguson after what just happened, but that wouldn't be a bad matchup either. And also just the fact that Tony's on a 2-fight losing streak. Kind of the only person in the division right now that makes sense, though, is Poirier, Oliveira, or Gaethje, I think. Dustin Poirier, I think, is likely going to fight Oliveira, so that maybe leaves you with Justin Gaethje if you're Michael Chandler. That's a fun fight to make, too. And, fuck, man, yeah, I think, man, yeah, Conor, I think, is either going to fight, sorry, I'm all over the place right now, but I think Conor will fight Tony Ferguson, Dan Hooker, Conor could fight Justin Gaethje too, though, you never know, right? Like, that's what I mean, there are options there for Conor that are always going to be options, but, yeah, anyway, I think that's going to wrap this one up, guys. Sorry for ranting so long at the end there about the matchups and everything, but just a great night of fights. And like I said, can't help but feel happy for Dustin Poirier after what he pulled off last night. I mean, it was nothing short of fucking remarkable. Like I said, I was thinking about it from the perspective of all the wars he's been in coming in against a fresh Conor McGregor, maybe a refocused Conor McGregor based on what we saw, and just went down and shut everything down. Michael Chandler picked up a big win. And we got big fight cards coming up as well. Who's next? I think on there's another fight on the 6th coming up. Then there's Izzy's coming up soon. I think that's in March. I can't remember the schedule off the top of my head. Like I said, guys, I feel like I'm still fucking waking up. But anyway, thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate it, and I will catch you all later. Bye-bye.